Welcome back to another episode of Women Blazers. I'm your host, Deanna Witter. Today, I'm happy to welcome Kendall Tyson as my featured guest. Kendall is the Vice President of Strategy and Analytics for the newest club joining the NHL, the Seattle Kraken. And in this episode, you'll hear Kendall share her journey, growing up as an athlete in Minnesota with a goal to become an industrial engineer. Combining her love for sports and optimizing complex processes, data, and structure, she ultimately engineered an incredible career path that landed her in a position to bring professional hockey back to Seattle.
I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan, which okay. I think is the hardest.
I'm Detroit Lions. You cannot say that.
That's different. See, the Lions, you know, aren't going to be good. No offense. The Vikings,
I accept that.
Are the worst because they get your hopes so high and they're so close. And then they always, you know, mess it up with some like little thing, like missed field goals at the end. That's happened twice, maybe going on three times. Fumbles, you know, interceptions. Anyway, I could go on and on about that. But
so Kendall, you went to Emory University to play basketball. You know, how did being an athlete shape you and your college experience?
Yeah, so I think, you know, being an athlete, I played actually sports growing up as well. I played soccer, basketball, and lacrosse in high school, and really always had the dream of playing college basketball from when I was young. And so to have that opportunity at Emory University was in many ways, you know, a dream come true. And I think, you know, basketball and in other sports, you know, they teach you lots of valuable lessons. You know, the first one is really tied to teamwork, and I'll, you know, go into it a little bit. It's more about like accountability and how you're impact the team overall. And that, you know, it's really apparent, you know, when you're playing in sports, but it also carries into, you know, your work and your career, your family, things like that. And then I think the other piece, you know, playing basketball in college really gave me structure. You know, I grew up in Minnesota and went to Emory down in Atlanta. And so in many ways had lots of freedom, perhaps that at 18, I wasn't quite ready for. And basketball was a way to provide some structure to my day and structure to my life that I think really set it on a path of success.
Oh, that's great. And I think the first time you and I ever spoke, we talked about being from Minnesota, and you know, I really appreciated our conversation around WNBA basketball and your knowledge around the game and the athletes and the talent. And you had shared with me, which I think is awesome, is that you were a ball girl. Is that right, for the Lynx?
I was, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that experience, and did that inspire you to keep pushing forward? And maybe what did that experience afford you to watch these women and be close to the game like that? Was that inspiring and motivating for you?
Absolutely. You know, I started as a ball girl with the Lynx when I was 14, and did it all the way through high school and the year, the summer after my freshman year in college. And, you know, I think one of the really impressive things for me was I got to see athletes that I had looked up to, you know, like I said, much of my life, you know, back, let's say, you know, it's funny back then, but, you know, basketball wasn't on TV. Women's basketball in particular was not on TV in the ways that it is today. Mm-hmm. Right. So for you wanted to see, you know, college basketball, women's basketball, you got to see, you know, the two semifinal games in the Final Four, the championship game in the Final Four. And then, you know, maybe the UConn and Tennessee rivalry they would show as well, you know, on ESPN. But that was it. And so, you know, many of the women who I had a chance to watch while I was a ball girl were women that I had seen play college basketball and just, you know, absolutely idolized. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, as with anything, you know, representation matters, right? It matters to see women in these positions doing things that you think you might be interested in. So And that, you know, scales all the way to what, you know, having women on the coaching staff, having women who were involved in the training and the medical staff, you know, seeing the folks who were doing some of the broadcasting and announcing for the team, you know, women in those positions. You know, I don't think that I internalized it as I, you know, have been able to reflecting back when I was in high school, but I can't imagine that seeing those things has definitely imprinted something in my brain that now I can look back and say, oh yeah, you know, it mattered that I saw, you know, someone who looked like me, you know, in those positions and saw that it was possible.
Right. I was just going to say, I mean, that seed of possibility that's happening at that age from those experiences, to your point that you didn't even probably realize had a huge impact on maybe some of the things that you decided to do beyond high school and where you are today, happened through those experiences, and representation is absolutely important. You ended up receiving a bachelor's in sociology at Emory. You know, how did you choose your major and what was your original goal for a career while you were there?
Yeah, so, you know, I had participated in a couple camps and opportunities as it was tied to engineering later in my high school years. And so I knew that I wanted to be an engineer, and specifically knew I wanted to be an industrial engineer, as I had attended a camp actually at Purdue, and we were a chance to sample the different types of engineering that they offered. And I was just so incredibly impressed because one of the students that we talked to that was an industrial engineer, he had interned at Disney and was working on the project that is now, you know, the Disney Fast Pass and those wristbands that they get.
Yes.
When you go. So he worked on that project like in its early infancy. And so I latched onto that very quickly. I was a very big fan of a computer game called Roller Coaster Tycoon, where you designed theme parks. And so, you know, once he said that, I was like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to be an industrial engineer. And so, you know, I kind of latched onto that. And of course, you know, when you're a kid and you tell people, like, you know, they ask you your senior year, oh, what do you think you want to do? And I would tell people, you know, I'm going to be an industrial engineer. And they'd be, ooh.
That's great.
Like, oh, nice. Adults like that. Okay, cool. So I'll stick with that. And so, you know, having, you know, knowing that I was going to pursue that, you know, Emory and Georgia Tech actually have a really incredible partnership, because Emory itself doesn't have an engineering program. And so they actually have a joint degree program between the two schools.
Okay.
And so when I went to Emory, I knew I was pursuing this joint degree between the two schools, and that I would ultimately graduate with a Bachelor of Science degree from Georgia Tech in industrial engineering. But while I was at Emory, you know, I think, it, you know, going back to my previous comment about adding some structure to my newfound freedom, it took me a while to pick a major. You know, the story behind it was essentially, I think I was a rising junior, and or might have been in my junior year, and the college counselor said, you know, you need to pick a major. And I don't know what I want to major in. I'm going to be an industrial engineer. And so you still have to pick one. And so what I did back, you know, again, back when they had the course catalog was like an actual like physical book.
Yeah, I had a physical book. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went through the course catalog and just read the entire thing, and made little check marks next to every class that I thought was interesting. And then I went through in the back and added up for each major, which major had the most check marks, and sociology won, which is like such an engineering approach to choosing a major. But that's how I landed on sociology.
So upon graduating and pursuing your degree in industrial engineering at Georgia Tech, you know, you graduated. Did you actually pursue that path, or did you take another path?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's interesting. There's traditional industrial engineering as a, you know, job position. you tend to find in manufacturing plants, distribution centers. It's a lot related to time studies and efficiencies. A lot of, you know, things around Six Sigma, you know, was very big. And I interned in that space with Avon and really enjoyed my time there, but particularly enjoyed it as it related to doing different projects. I liked having, you know, multiple projects that I was working on at the same time. I liked meeting with people in the different departments and talking to the people on the floor and trying to figure things out. And then, you know, creating some sort of, you know, the analytics and the presentation that come out of it. And so when I was at Georgia Tech, when I first got there, one of the pieces that I looked into was Consulting Club. And so I was very active in Consulting Club. And the more and more I learned about consulting, the more I learned that, you know, a lot of what they do is exactly what I really enjoyed about my internship experience. And so, you know, following graduation, I actually pursued a career in management consulting with Accenture.
What was your experience at Accenture, and what was your biggest takeaway being a consultant?
Wow. Let's see. So, well, I was a consultant for 4 years. Of that, I spent a majority of my time in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, helping them implement a state-based health exchange and completely change the way they administer food, medical, and cash assistance benefits to the people of Kentucky. Wow. It was a massive project. Tied, you know, the medical side was tied to the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, had tons of public visibility at the time. And I would also say was just an interesting political climate as the governor of Kentucky was a Republican governor and chose to align and implement the Affordable Care Act, which was in line with President Obama's policies, obviously a Democrat president. So there, you know, it was an interesting political time to be there. But I think what it also just made our work so much more important because I was on the ground in Kentucky, traveling to counties throughout the state, talking to workers, talking to people. And I think what was just incredibly impactful to me in this process was the importance of understanding and implementing things bottom up instead of top down. I think, you know, oftentimes we can at the top have brainstorm projects, you know, think we want to implement things. But if we don't take the time to get the input from those who are working it day to day, you miss what's actually going to be the most impactful and the best way to implement it. And what you end up seeing is you see top down policies, and then they come out and you'll see people will say, like, that's impossible to implement. Right. And so I think that my time there really, you know, sent that signal home for me that, you know, you've really, really got to do your due diligence with the people who do the work day to day. And that's how you're going to get the best ideas, the best changes that are actually implementable and not just, you know, ideas at the top.
Right, right. And so you spent, to your point, you were there for 4 years doing this incredible work. It sounds like it was very impactful to you and maybe where you wanted to take your career from there. But instead of leaving and going to maybe another organization like we usually hear in some of my podcast stories, you were then motivated to pursue an MBA. And your MBA that you explored and pursued was at Yale University. What was the decision-making process for you to determine that this was the route you wanted to go, as well as what is the process to get into an Ivy League school like Yale?
Yeah, so I think the decision for me in going to business school was partially influenced by just seeing what many of my peers were doing. It's pretty traditional in consulting to do consulting for a while and then go to business school in order to transition into a different career, as many would say, the career in industry, right? So, and I think getting my MBA for me at the time was really set at how do I explore what else is out there for me. I knew that I wasn't looking to continue into consulting, but wasn't exactly sure what direction I wanted to take things. And so I pursued an MBA through a program called Management Leadership for Tomorrow. Shortly, it's called MLT, which is a program for minority students or minority folks who are interested in pursuing their MBA. You apply to the program and they provide coaching as well as workshops and a timeline to help you submit your application and put forth the strongest application that you can. And so for me, that was, you know, just really helpful in organizing everything. So making sure that I was writing my essays on time, making sure I was giving plenty of time for people to submit their recommendations and their statements on my behalf, making sure I was studying, you know, for the GMAT and getting, you know, the best score that I can. And so I would say, you know, that was incredibly helpful for me. And I guess in terms of getting into your question about getting into an Ivy League school, you know, one of the things that I liked really about MLT was, you know, it's less about the caliber of the school and what do you want to do?
Yeah.
You know, all of these schools offer expertise and direction across, you know, a variety of different topics, but some of them have like actual expertise in those topics. And so I think, you know, it's less, like I said, less about the caliber of the school and more about what do you want to do and really pushing yourself to think through that and finding a list of schools for you to apply to that makes the most sense based on what you think you might want to do and what's that best fit for you.
So what was your biggest takeaway or your biggest learning from your experience of going through the process of obtaining your business degree?
Oh man. My biggest takeaway, probably just how global business really is. And how, if you don't understand global cultures and practices, how you can really slip up in the business space. And that things that are, you know, considered traditional or even controversial or unacceptable in the U.S. are not necessarily true around the globe. And I think, you know, another piece that was impactful for me is it was, you know, I as a, you know, African-American woman was, you know, often considered a, you know, minority in the room, but it was the first time where I was considered a minority in the room because I was an American.
Ah, yeah.
And that's different.
Yeah. That's a perspective. That is interesting. Yes.
Yeah. It's very different, right? It's, you know, when you have, you know, you're the only person in the room who, whose native language is English and they decide that they're going to do the math in French. Like, you know, I just kind of sat there and was like, okay. You know, the numbers on the board are numbers that I recognize, but I have no clue what you're saying, but that's okay. Right. It's understanding that, you know, you don't have to be the lead all the time, right? Like you don't have to always do things the American way. Right. And I think that was really, an impactful moment for me. You know, the other one I think was big is especially in global business, recognizing that some of the terms and the things that we use, how tied to the US they are, right? So for example, one of the phrases that's often used is you'll say, oh, you know, I need somebody to quarterback this project, which if you're not from the, like, you know, if you don't know American football, like, what does that even mean?
Right.
Like, so there were, you know, or movie references, you know, that came up. One of the comments a professor made, I remember, he said something and, you know, referenced the Great Bambino. And we all laughed. It was so, you know, it was so funny. And, you know, but it was the international students were like, what are you even talking about? And so
you're like, no, you haven't seen The Sandlot?
Yeah, everybody's exactly. Seen The Sandlot. Everyone's seen Sandlot. You've never seen this movie?
Yeah.
And so I think that was just really important lessons for me as I, you know, think about, you know, reaching multicultural audiences, you know, mm-hmm. You know, being here, to tie it into kind of being here in Seattle, so, so diverse, so many people from all around the world. And how do we, you know, how do we communicate? How do we tell our story? How do we message in a way that everybody can understand and not feel like, well, that's clearly not for me because I don't know what a quarterback is.
So upon graduating from Yale, you actually are going to get your sports industry break-in moment now. So you graduate and you take an opportunity with Topgolf in corporate development and strategy. Tell me about this opportunity. How did it come to you? And what were the responsibilities that you had there at Topgolf?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say got my first really big break was with the LPGA as an intern.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And so I went down to Daytona Beach in my summer between my first and second year and worked with them on strategic planning and outlining their next 4-year strategic plan. And then also did some work with the corporate partnerships team on a big project of how can the league reach a younger audience in particular, and how could that be driven through new partnerships with companies that were up and coming at the time. And it's funny because one of the companies that we pitched was Body Armor, who at the time was, you know, was very small. I think it was Kobe had just invested in it. But, you know, very no name compared to, you know, the bigger Powerade, Gatorade. And one of the pieces that we pitched was, you know, look, they're, you know, really looking to start to make a splash and big on, you know, kids and youth and, you know, it's growing. And so I just remember that so well because, you know, now I go to a grocery store and it's stocked with Body Armor and I just see it all the time now. And so worked on that project. In that, one of the pieces was they have a partnership with Topgolf. And so that was the kind of first introduction to it from a business side of things. But I also had known it because I lived in Atlanta at the time, and Atlanta has just a really incredible Topgolf, one up in Alpharetta and one mm-hmm. in the city center. And so I had gone plenty of times with my friends. And it just so happened that a Yale School of Management alumni worked at Topgolf in corporate development.
Oh,
and
nice.
So I reached out and we, you know, chatted and got on, you know, just his radar of, you know, yeah, I won't graduate for another year, but if you're ever, you know, looking to expand your team, I would be incredibly interested. And it just so happens that about, you know, 8 months later, he was interested in expanding his team. And it was a funny day because I was in class and my phone was just buzzing like crazy. And I was like, what is going on? And I got out of class and it's just like tons of text messages from friends that are like, hey, have you seen this posting on our job board? There's a posting about Topgolf there. You know, it's like perfect for you. Like you have to apply. Have you applied yet? You know, I'm like, I just got out of class.
You're like, give me a second.
Holy cow. I haven't even read it. You know? And so sure enough, I read it and it was, you know, posted by him. So I had a chance to, you know, reach back out and just, you know, reconnect and tell him, you know, hey, I'm incredibly interested. I'd like to apply, you know, go through the full process. And we did a full, you know, interview, but didn't get, you know, got accepted the job on April 22nd.
Now you spent 2 years with Topgolf. And after those 2 years, you ended up making a move and coming to the NHL mm-hmm. and joining for a while there, you guys have been the NHL Seattle. Is that right?
Yeah.
And finally, more recently, officially the Seattle Kraken. and you were named the VP of Strategy Analytics. You know, how did you pursue this opportunity and what motivated you to make this move from Atlanta to Seattle?
Yeah, so I think the biggest piece was that I had been keeping an eye on the team ever since it was announced. I had actually took the job here in Seattle with Topgolf. So I was already out here.
Oh, so you transitioned. Okay, great.
I did, yep. And then it was after that, you actually, my brother moved here as well. He was a teacher at Lakeside and a former a hockey coach, hockey player as well. And he was at an open skate down in Renton, Washington. And he met the president and CEO at the open skate. And he's, you know, a good skater, a minority. And, you know, the president, he came over to him and said, hey, you know, you're a good skater. And there's, you know, not many people who look like you who are such good skaters. So they started talking, and he, the president and CEO, actually knows my dad, who is the medical director for the Minnesota Wild. And we ended up getting a coffee about 2 weeks later and just chatting about the team and where they were. And the president and CEO was, you know, essentially kind of like, I think you guys can really help us. Let's talk about how we can make that happen.
So what are your main responsibilities with the club, and what do you most enjoy about your role and being a part of this team?
Yeah, so my main responsibilities with this role are to build operational and financial models that help us make strategic decisions. So I work with a ticketing team on things like building out models that help us make decisions on the amount of premium versus general inventory, the amount of single game tickets versus partial plans and full season plans, and help us make, you know, adjustments so that we can see how we're stacking up against projections and also stacking up against accessibility. The other, you know, I work with the arena on cost benefit analyses. I've worked with our transportation team on modeling out what it would look like to offer free public transit for all our fans, which is an initiative that I'm super excited about, that we're going to offer to all of our fans to and from the game, as well as, you know, other initiatives as it relates to marketing and fan feedback, things like that. But what I'm most excited about the role in the team is how much our values are really woven into every aspect of the organization. So, you know, we have a very strong commitment to diversity, which I'm just really, really proud of, and making sure that we have a variety of voices in the room to match the variety of fans that we have here in the Pacific Northwest. I really enjoy our commitment to making sure that hockey is accessible for everyone. You know, I think hockey is ranked either number one or number two most expensive youth sport in the United States. And we've launched, you know, an entire team dedicated to providing greater access to traditionally marginalized youth in the game of hockey. And I think that's going to be just an incredible initiative that's going to have actual, you know, impact here in the Seattle area. And so I think it's really those values that are just so key and important as to why I really, really like this organization.
This is your first team experience. I mean, you've obviously been in sports prior to joining Seattle Kraken, but this is your first team experience in the industry. Have you faced any challenges learning the ropes of the front office leadership?
So I think I would have to say, you know, what's awesome about this team is, you know, I had a chance to learn from some of the best of the best. You know, Todd Lewicki, has made a name for himself in a variety of industries, both team and leagues, and just being able to learn from him, as well as other senior leaders who have been on teams across the different leagues. Many worked in football, many worked with MLS, you know, some working with other teams in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And so I think just having that exposure and having a chance, especially to join so early, to really learn and learn the ropes, to see how they operate, see how they think, that has been just an incredible, you know, opportunity. And then I would also say, you know, I owe a huge shout out to my business intelligence counterparts with other NHL teams. You know, we have a little Slack channel where we can all chat and share ideas, and they've been just incredibly welcoming as, you know, we look to build our business intelligence from the ground up, which, you know, many teams are in the process of trying to make, you know, changes based on legacy systems and, you know, data from old arenas, bringing over to a new arena, and, you know, data from old systems and bringing it into a new system and things like that. But we have a chance to do it right from the start. And as I've really relied heavily on them to get an understanding of, you know, hey, if you could blow it all up and start over, what would you do?
Yeah,
because that's exactly the opportunity that we have here in Seattle, and it's a unique opportunity.
Women and minorities are heavily underrepresented in strategy analytics leadership positions across this industry. You know, how can we create more opportunities at teams and or expose this path with up-and-comers?
Yeah, you know, I think it starts, you know, similar to me doing, you know, the program at Purdue, right? Yeah. Where I had a chance to see the various engineering disciplines, right? I think without that program, I don't know that, you know, I set my eyes on industrial engineering. I don't know that Disney even does industrial engineering, right? I just think of Disney as the movies and the parks. So I think it starts with exposure. And I think it starts with exposure at a young age, which is why I think it's so important for teams, you know, to hire, you know, minorities and women in these positions. Because, you know, getting all the way back to our earlier discussion is representation does matter and exposure does matter. And so I think that's huge. I would also put it, you know, a little bit of the onus is on folks like me and others who are in this position to put ourselves out there to be in front of, you know, the high school students, the college students who are thinking about these careers or might not know anything about these careers, to, you know, to say, hey, like, yes, we're here. There's people who look like us. And if, you know, if you're interested in math and numbers and science and sports, you know, you can combine all of those things into a career. And so I think those, you know, those two things are just really, really important, you know, putting our, you know, people in the roles, putting ourselves out there, and then, you know, making sure we provide opportunities for high school and college women to see the type of work we do.
You know, thinking about ticket sales and revenue roles, we have an inside sales program where we're very much recruiting and targeting and exposing the world of sports ticket sales at the college level. And we do, you know, class projects and a lot of integration with at the high school level as well to expose the sort of like career opportunity. And there's probably something, to your point, there's probably something around those, around that same sort of footprint that we can almost restructure and create something new that really exposes data analytics and other areas of the organization or our industry that are maybe not so exposed to students or at the student level.
It starts, that kind of mindset starts early. You know, you talk a little bit these days a lot about, you know, women tend to not apply for the job unless they meet 80%+ of the requirements. And, you know, I think a lot about like, how did we get to that point?
Yeah.
I think it does start young. And so, you know, I think it is going beyond just hosting an event, you know, called Sports and Analytics. You know, if you just post, you're not going to get a ton of women walking in the door.
Right.
You know, it's not going to happen because they don't think that it's for them. Right. So it is going to be, you know, going deeper, right? It is going to be, you know, do you talk to the soccer coach? Do you talk to the women's basketball coach? Do you talk to,
you know, the women's hockey coach, whoever it is, and do you just give them a special invite? You know, just you kind of have to go that extra mile,
right,
to make people aware that it is for them. And I think that's, you know, a key to the next step.
Yeah. No, that's, I couldn't agree more. So now as we transition and we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about how you manage your lifestyle, about your lifestyle, who you are outside of work. And I know you're married. You've been married for a couple of years. And one of my favorite topics, babies. Mm-hmm. You have a 7-month-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. So how do you and your husband kind of team up and make everything work for your family?
Yeah, that is a learning curve we are on. I, you know, we joke, you know, we hosted a little baby shower for some folks who on our team who are having kids in the next 2 months here. And, you know, they asked, you know, the current parents, you know, for some advice. And I kind of chuckled and I was like, well, with my 7 months of expertise, you know, here's what I've learned. But I say that to say, you know, it is certainly a team effort and a journey. You know, I have to give, you know, incredible props to the state of Washington for passing the family leave program, which allows any parent or guardian to take up to 16 weeks of partially paid leave to care for a child or an elderly family member. And so we took advantage of that. I took 16 weeks first, and then, you know, compliments to my husband who jumped right in and said, well, I want to take some time and spend time with our daughter too. So he took 10 weeks as well and ran daddy daycare for 10 weeks. And it was great to see. You know, I think they, part of the reason they have such a strong bond right now is because of that time they spent just the two of them. And, you know, I think one of the pieces that helps us the most is, one, we have a joint calendar. I think that is
shared. A
shared calendar, you know, and we do things happen all the time. You know, he'll go off to a call and I'll be like, where are you going? You know, he's like, oh, I got a call. I'm like, it wasn't on the calendar, you know. So, you know, if it's on the calendar, we're good to go. That's how, you know, we know, you know, who's free when and who's not free when. And I think that really helps keep expectations aligned. You know, I think that's just such a huge thing. It's like when you're expecting to have help and you don't, that's when things really get challenging. But if you know, okay, like, you know, he's got a call for this hour, I'll be on my own. It's like, okay, I can prep for that. Right. I would say the other piece that we do is we do a family meeting every Sunday, and we like outline the week ahead. So we kind of pull up the calendar, look at, okay, what do we have? You know, obviously we're working. Yes. And then, you know, then what's happening, you know, each evening, who's got what. We talk about, we really, you know, especially things as it relates to her. We talk about, you know, what's her nap schedule been lately? Like, what is she going to eat? That's, you know, the worst is when you have a crying, hungry baby and you're like, oh, I haven't thought about if she's supposed to have yogurt or raspberries. Like, I don't know. You know.
Decisions.
Exactly. So we lay all that out. And, you know, we've also been just incredibly blessed to have my mom here for the past, I think, 8 weeks or so since we've both been back to work, working from home.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a blessing.
Yeah. Yeah. And she watches the baby Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And so my other piece, my third kind of piece of advice is welcome the help. Oh, my gosh. You know, if I know COVID, COVID puts a little bit of, you know, wrinkle in things. If, you know, but if you want them to wear a mask, whatever it may be, wash their hands 10 times a day. But gosh, you know, I think the help is just so even if they hold the baby for half an hour while you shower, or like just go outside, or you know, breathe for 10 minutes, you know, it all helps. It all makes a difference. So those would be my three pieces: joint calendar, a weekly meeting, and accept all the help you can get.
I love at the beginning of our conversation, you outlined that what you loved about athletics was that the structure, and yet, you know, you're still very structured and organized in everything you do. It's threaded throughout your whole, you know, kind of path here, which I think is awesome. There's a theme of structure, organization at a level that I have yet to even come close to meeting.
Except for my room. That's always been the even when I was younger, my parents would be like, you're so structured and organized into your schoolwork, you know, how you, you know, talk and hang out with your friends. But then you like you walk into my room and it's crazy. But I always explain it as organized chaos. Like if you ask me where are my basketball uniform shorts, I could tell you where they are. It's just not easily viewed or organized when you go in.
But you know where it's at. So you got it.
I know where it's at.
You have it organized in your head. I love it. And I had one blazing question from a listener that came in, and the question is actually an easy one and a fun one. And the question was, what is your favorite sports moment or experience?
I had the opportunity to be at the very first regular season home opener for the Minnesota Wild.
Very cool.
Sat with myself, my two brothers, in the stands, and everyone got these, you know, first inaugural game towels. And the Wild had selected Darby Henderson, who was a Minnesota guy, with their first pick. It was a huge deal. Huge deal. Minnesota is known to be the state of hockey, and we really, really care about our hockey. And so to have him picked, you know, for the new Minnesota team was huge. Yeah. So we're sitting at the game. Everyone is so excited. The place is just electric. And then Darby scores the first goal.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I've never felt this so much passion, so much appreciation. You know, I'm crying, the family in front of us is crying. I mean, we're high-fiving and, you know, going up and down the aisle, giving people high fives and hugs, and they're, you know, playing the goal song. And then it was, you know, a very common song, even with the high schools. And so everybody is into it and singing. And it was just such a huge moment for Minnesota to see, you know, the hometown guy score the first goal for your team. It meant everything that I think Minnesota hockey had been hoping for since we lost the North Stars years before. And that was to be there and to just see and experience that passion and energy was incredible.
What advice do you have for anyone who's looking to pursue a position or a career path similar to the one that you have, knowing what you know today?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the first piece of advice is really getting an understanding of the industry and the structure. So doing research on the different departments within a team and within a league. I get a lot of people who say, I'm interested in working in sports. And I say, that's fantastic. What do you want to do? And they say, well, I don't know. And, you know, the first piece of advice is you have to kind of figure that out.
Right.
And so my first piece of advice is to do that research on, you know, what does the partnerships team do? What does marketing do? What does finance do? What does analytics do, et cetera, so that you can at least kind of narrow it down to maybe to one, maybe two that you think you might be interested in. My second piece of advice is to read sports business related publications. Mm-hmm. or shows or podcasts, you know, a lot of people are fans. You know, I'm a huge fan, but your fandom isn't going to help you in doing your job. And so I think, you know, making sure that you are up on what's happening from a business perspective in sports is really important. And the last piece of advice I have is, you know, something that I always think is, you know, how do you set yourself apart? And I think, you know, one of the interview questions I always ask is I pick a hot topic in sports and ask, you know, what are the business considerations that that organization needs to think about? And this really highlights to me whether somebody is a fan or if they've about it, right? So I'll give an example. When the now Washington football team, I think it is, Washington Football Club.
Yeah. We gotta get used to that, but yes.
I know. When they were considering a name change, right? Everyone's like, oh yeah, they should just change their name. And I was sitting here like, look, I don't disagree that they should change their name, but is anybody going to talk about how that is going to be an absolute business nightmare? Like, you know, and so one of the questions that I asked was, I said, well, what do they need to think about when considering making this name change? Right. And a lot of people say things like, well, how does the Native American community feel about it? Absolutely important. How the fans think about it, absolutely important, but it often stops there, you know, and my list is much longer. What about all the street signs that are named, you know, after the current name? What about all the partnerships that have the old logo next to their current logo, right? What about all of the branding in the practice facility, all the branding in the arena? You know, there's so many things. Like, this is going to cost a lot of money.
Right. And that plan has to be put in place to change it.
Because the other piece is, if you miss something, the consequences are dire.
Right. Right.
So you can't slip up. So there's so many little things to think about. And so that third piece of advice is to really push yourself to think deeply about the business impacts of things that are happening in the sports world, because those are the things that are gonna, it's a muscle that you have to train and push. And that's what's gonna ultimately kind of set you apart and make you better at your job in the long term.
And that's a wrap on episode 13. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you to Kendall for sharing her journey and insights with all of us today. Be sure to check out and follow Women Blazers on Instagram to stay connected and to tap into the Women Blazers Network. And look forward to episode 14 dropping Monday, September 28th, featuring Jill Snodgrass, Vice President of Corporate Partnerships for the Philadelphia 76ers of the NBA. Until next time, continue to be safe and have a great week.